Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're very pleased to welcome back a guest we had on quite a while ago. Very pleased to have him back. Darren Hazelwood, of course, the CEO of Panther Metals. Darren, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Mark. Thanks. Good to see you. Hi, Kenny.
Yeah, good to have you back. And yeah, of course, Kenny as well. How are you doing up in Scotland?
Yep, all good. Yeah, it's good to have you back on, Darren. It must have been about a year and a half ago. I mean, we forget we've been doing these podcasts for 2.5 years now and we're up in the 180 nearly, I think, Mark. Correct me if I'm wrong. Must be around.
Around that number, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to get you back on for a catch-up, Darren, and maybe rather than doing the original format where we get your life story, it'd be good maybe if you just give us a quick five-minute kind of potted, a very short and brief potted history of Darren Hazelwood, and then we can move on to the wonderful thing that is Panther Metals, which of course you are the CEO of. So,
yeah, no, by all means. My working life has been about building businesses in the private sector, which I'm successful with. Within that process, I was an investor in the exploration space in the market. I don't tend to play the markets these days at all. Very occasionally. I was notifiable in a few companies. And within that, I was always very proactive. And I would encourage any investor to do that. Get out there, get to the shows, get in contact with the businesses that you're either invested in or looking to invest in. Seek answers and push that forward. I've always been a big believer in that. My email address and number are always available should anybody want to get in contact with me. So I was an investor in the sector and I got approached to whether I would be interested in being a non-exec on Panther Metals. It was, at the time, it was a sort of moribund business on the old NEX exchange, which is now, of course, Aquis. And what we're doing, refinancing it, to then transform it into an exploration play. That was the plan. I was on the board for probably 8 or 9 months. And Mitch Smith, who's my CEO, the company's COO, sorry, COO, he was CEO. Being based in Canada, it was a challenge for Mitch to do the face-to-face and the day-to-day grind. So it sort of naturally evolved and I ended up taking on the business. And my first remit was to get the business off of the NEX exchange. There was pretty much zero liquidity on the NEX exchange. So we needed to have access to capital markets and people were not overly keen in going on to the NEX and putting their money in because the truth is they couldn't trade within that exchange. Hmm. So within 12 months, I got it listed onto the LSE. And that was January of 2020. And of course, at the end of February 2020, COVID hit. So it was extraordinary bad timing on my behalf. However, the COVID process did open other doors. And I don't actually believe the business would be in such a strong position as it is now if it wasn't for COVID. And my own belief is that these businesses, they offer extraordinary upside. That's why I moved out of the private sector into the public sector. You wear a tin hat. You have to take the peaks and troughs that come along. And you have to be used to, if you're going to take the pat on the backs, you've also got to take the knives in the back, shall we say. And that is all part of getting involved. We know that. And I've got a belief that, to be honest, the thing that transforms these businesses is a drill hole. And that is what the focus should be. And that's very much been our focus, is to get projects to a drill-ready stage so that we can put those drills in the ground. I'm not scared of failing. What bothers me more than failing with a drill hole is actually not drilling in the first place, because you're not going to make the discoveries at Transform. That's what's happened with the likes of GGP. Back in the day, a company I was quite involved with, MTR, in Botswana. And these businesses are transformed by that. And that's very much what I've led with Panther. It has taken a longer time to get to the point that we are now. There are genuine sound reasons why that's gone on, but we're at that precipice now to really move on to that next stage.
I think, of course, you're right. A drill hole will transform a company, but it's not just a drill hole. I think you mentioned there GGP, for example, and I remember GGP was a company that no one was interested in, was pretty, as you described, Panther, like a moribund company, quite a demotivated board, I believe. And there was a bit of a board change, and that company suddenly reinvigorated itself and became a lot more interesting way before they found that drill hole. So I think it comes down to, certainly in exploration, it is about finding the drill hole and finding that deposit. But equally, management or the leader of that company is just as, if not, well, it is as important as that. Would you agree? And coming from your background, how would you pitch yourself as the man for this, if I can ask you that question?
Yeah, I think what you've got to be able to do is maintain your focus on what the long game is. There's a huge amount of work that goes on in the background, and what you're trying to, the amount of work that entails is just driving you towards making a discovery. And I think you've got to make sure that you don't get lost within all the other processes that are going on, and all the other pulls on your time, and all the other distractions. Like, for instance, we would be probably a couple of weeks away from releasing our 6-month release. Now, within a small business and a tight team, that's quite a challenge, pulling that together, mm-hmm. and getting that out there. And as a small example of that, it can potentially be distracting. But I think the leader of any business has to understand what the end game is. They have to understand the processes in between. They've got to make sure that the business doesn't get distracted. I think in the public markets, it is at times easy for the business to get distracted by events that aren't conducive to the end game. But also, I think that some companies are actually historically, and I don't think you've got so many now, but I think they can be scared of failing. Mm. And I think that's probably a wider conversation that investors and the market in exploration should have, because the odds are that you are going to fail if you are drilling the deposit. You can have all the right geological information. You can have everything set up perfectly. You can drill, and you cannot make the discovery you was hoping to find. And you've got to then be able to move on to the next stage and making sure that your plan's in place. I love a company called Dome. They were predominantly around in the 70s in Canada. They got taken out in the early to mid 80s, ultimately by a major. And their policy was identify, do the sampling, and if it's all locks in, drill it. And that's very much my own personal belief. Bonga, we're going to drill 5 different targets in one drill program. And that's unheard of. And these are 5 separate targets. So you're going to be up to 15 holes of varying amounts and varying lengths. But it's all going to happen in one program, because we want to understand if the metals are in the ground. We know that the geology is absolutely spot on. We can see over in other areas that they've got, it's almost like a sister greenstone belt. And that's what we've got to do. Just got to keep on driving through, Mark.
Yeah, I think.
Go on, Kenny.
Sorry to jump in. I'm just sitting and listening. Sometimes it's quite nice as a third person just to sit and listen to what's going on. I think there's an important thing as well when you talk about Greatland and Metal Tag, etc. You need an element of luck as well, Darren. I don't care what anyone says, you know, you can have the best surveys and the best geologists and everything under the sun, but there's always an element of luck. So it is in this game. And sometimes it's just right place, right time. Bingo. You get it.
And, do you know, privately, everyone will talk about that. But publicly, they you know, people won't, because they want to remove that element of luck out of the conversation. But there isn't a geologist out there that privately won't say to you, everything's right, but we're going to need a bit of luck.
Yeah. A geologist always sits on the fence until the drill goes down, and then when they find something, they come out ultra bullish. You never get a geologist that commits before the drill goes down. They're always, well, like, you know, it could be there, we don't know yet. And then as soon as they hit something, a decent intersection, they quickly fall off that fence. So they do. That's fine. They're only protecting their livelihood. So I get it.
Look, get it, Tony. You know, I've always been a big advocate of making sure that we've got the right expertise in the business, and we have. And apart from Dotted Lake, it's not a coincidence that we've done deals with geologists, and they have very much remained part of the process. And of course, our chairman Nick, he's a geo, he's also a competent person for reporting terms to the London Stock Exchange and on AIM. You know, this is a guy that's been there, done it, got the T-shirt, and he's exceptionally well respected. And we've also got the wider network of geologists within the confines of the company, but possibly on the outer edge.
Yep.
And but I maintain you get two geologists in the room and you give them a scenario, and you'll get four opinions out of those two geologists. And that's just the nature of geology. It's not, if it was a straightforward science, none of us would be here in reality. No. And the market for us wouldn't exist, because everybody would go out there and they would all drill in the right places, and every discovery would be beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It'd be boring as well. So we probably wouldn't have this podcast or nothing. So we like a bit of excitement and a bit of success and failure. It's like Scotland, we're always glorious at failures. We seem to have a party at a failure. So we do. But anyway, enough about football. We'll not even go there. But
no,
we won't mention the 1978 World Cup in Argentina, can we? Anyway,
it was a great song though. So it was. It was a fantastic song. I always remember the World Cups for the songs. England's are just atrocious. They've got one decent one, which they roll out every year. Three Lions, and they never seem to come out with anything new. But to be honest, near to Scotland, I think it's a thing of the past now. But at least this time we had Weekend Boogie, which was quite catchy. So it was, from our point of view.
Yeah, but to be honest, Kenny, you do tend to have quite large gaps in between to develop your musical repertoire, whereas England only have 4 years, Scotland have many, many years. But as you say, we're probably best to move off of this subject.
Yeah, it's just like a malt whiskey. You know, you've got to leave it 12, 14, 16, 20 years, whatever. You've just got to let it mature.
Well, talking of maturing, yeah, I'm doing a lot of that right now. So let's talk about, you said, Darren, about the end game and the process to get there. I wonder if I can ask you, first of all, what is the end game? I'm sure you can probably sum it up in a few words. Then we can do a broad sweep of Panther, the company, and then perhaps talk about the process to get there. You know, a goal without a plan is just a wish. So I'd like to hear about your plan. So first of all, what is the goal? What is the end game, in your opinion, for Panther?
Two words, buyout.
Buyout, okay. So that will come from presumably finding something very significant that a major or a joint venture partner would want a slice of the pie.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not miners, Mark. Right, we're an exploration company. The goal here is very much to make discoveries as economically as possible, and then to monetarize those discoveries.
Okay, excellent. Well, what are your chances of success then, Darren? What's Panther got in its portfolio that you've assembled there? And of course, you know, last time we spoke, it was early days in the company, but you know, you've had a year and a bit, maybe a couple of field seasons of drilling. So how are things sort of shaping up?
I've probably been accused of being over bullish in the past. If I was bullish then, now I'm probably screaming from the rooftops. We've assembled an extraordinary collection of assets it's not too much, but every one of them, for different reasons, are very prospective for a discovery. And that's exactly what we set out to do. And Dotted Lake, we made an announcement a little while back regarding a review of Dotted Lake because of the success that Palladium 1 have been having, and they've been gradually moving closer to the Dotted Lake property. And the last success they've announced was on the joint venture land with First Class Metals. And that triggered us to review that data. And because our eyes are elsewhere, you know, our focus is very much on Ubonga. But they got so close that we thought, right, now, let's just have a re-look at Dotted Lake. And some of the data that we uncovered, and the geology, and the structures, the intrusions that are there, the conductors and how they interact with the exceptionally high soil grades, the copper, nickel, cobalt on surface from the historic soil programs. We looked at, and suddenly Dotted Lake's come, you know, it's right back in it and hugely back in play. And I think the market has got that just due to the private interactions I've had from people asking me questions. Yep. But that was a dead duck. But that's just one sort of microcosm of the business.
I think, Darren, it may just be worth dwelling on that for a couple of minutes more, because I mean, obviously you say, you know, Palladium 1 and First Class with a joint venture are moving closer to you guys. I mean, it's only a couple of kilometres away, isn't it?
So First Class land borders directly onto the Dotted Lake property. But the high mag location that we're talking about with the gabbro and serpentinite, and those intrusive rocks, that actually sits probably about 10 kilometers away from West Pickle Lake where that discovery was made, just under 10 kilometers. But they have got two further drill holes that they'll be drilling, which brings them closer again to us that they haven't conducted yet. So, but our actual land package is bang next door, and that high mag area, Kenny, is the biggest in that band. Palladium 1 have announced a new nickel district in their announcement, 20 kilometers long. We would hope that it's going to be a 30 kilometer long new nickel district, and there's no reasons for us to. Not think that we can't very much be part of that, because our grades are extraordinary. You have got tens and tens of copper grades in soils above over 100 ppm, right up to sort of 861 ppm in copper. The nickel grades up to 640, cobalt up to 214. These are all ppms in soil. And that was done in 83, but it was announced in 84. And nobody's revisited that area. And we know from our drilling, we did a bit of a speculative hold on the gold, which is just north of the of this feature, the conductors. We got gold all the way through the hole, not high grade, you know, around a gram a ton over a meter, but in all different areas. So we know that the right geological processes have happened in the area as well to form these deposits.
It's a good position, Ben, just to sit back and watch your neighbours drill hell out the property, because I have been doing a bit of digging, and I believe that's the only permit that Palladium 1 have currently got to drill. So I think there is multiple drill rigs on the Pickle Lake. So, you know, there's a news-rich he may come in the next 3 or 4 months anyway for the joint venture, well, Palladium One and the joint venture.
Yep. So, apologies, Kenny. Sorry.
No, when you go.
But yeah, you're absolutely right in that assessment. That's my understanding as well. But as a company, we will get out to Dotted Lake and look at the sort of relook at the soils. But effectively, what we'll be doing is just sitting and watching for a bit longer, because we at the value of our property can increase exponentially without us doing a thing, whilst we're focusing over at Ubonga. And because you've got to remember, every time a company puts a drill hole in the ground into geology that matches yours, you're learning something from that. We're able to gain something for nothing because they've got to release that information to market. So it's a beautiful position for an explorer like Panther, where we've got every single box ticked, but we're under no pressure to go back to that location. It's not like it's our sole asset and we need to get straight back on that. We absolutely don't need to. We can keep getting a greater picture of the geology, and then we can strike when we feel that the time is right. That's a powerful position.
Oh, it definitely is. And of course, we've got our other UK friends, Fulcrum, who are not listed yet. They're in the mix there as well. They've got a sort of footprint in a similar area. So it's almost like an invasion of the Brits in that area. There's Fulcrum yourselves. You've been there the longest, obviously, and first class. And obviously, Pow were there as well, Pow Metal Resources, but they have vended their assets into first class. So yeah, it's a very British postcode over there, so it is at the moment in that particular area.
Well, it is, and of course, once Fulcrum list, we're going to own 20% of that business.
Yep, I was just going to come on to that, so maybe just run through the process of that again.
I kind of got chucked into the asset. That's my fault. Maybe if I give a quick review of the company and what we've got, and then we'll delve into the Fulcrum deal a little bit more. We're main list. Today our market cap's around £5 million. We hold 37%, just under 37% of Panther Metals Australia, an ASX listed company. That valuation as of today is around £2.2-2.3 million. We have a deal on the table with Fulcrum Metals that we'll go into more detail in a sec. And we also sit with around £1 million in cash. Once we go through the details in the Fulcrum Metals, you'll see that basically the Australian holding, our cash position, and the deal with Fulcrum almost balances out to exactly £5 million. So when I talk about Dotted Lake, when I talk about Bonga, when I talk about Manitou Lakes, the market is valuing them at zero. We are in an extraordinarily powerful position. It's gobsmacking that's what the market's view on them are, especially when you take into account the conversations that we've been having. I can't go into details, but you know, there's a reason that our focus is on Bonga and why we're drilling there, and we've got very big eyes on us.
Yes, obviously you mentioned Fulcrum there, Dan. The deal that is pending, which seen you vend Big Bear into Fulcrum for a return of, can't exactly remember the percentage. Was it about 20? In the 20s anyway, wasn't it, Dan? Tell me anyway. Give me the full picture of that deal and when it's likely to conclude.
Yeah, so if I... So Fulcrum, just to give people a bit of background, Fulcrum have got a number of properties on the Schreiber-Hemlo Greenstone Belt. Dotted Lake is at the far eastern end of that, literally at the very eastern limb. And Schreiber, where the Big Bear project is the western end of that greenstone belt. We obviously know Hemlo. It's a world famous gold mine. And they've got numerous properties along that belt. And their main focus is in the Big Bear Schreiber area. So when they approach us, we love Big Bear. We always have done. We believe that our soil programs have linked to areas on Big Bear that nobody has previously. That could be a transformational moment for that property. We actually think it is, but you know, it's the Fulcrum guys that are going to find that out. And Fulcrum approached me, let's just say early this year, whether we would be interested in doing a deal. What had happened in the previous October, we'd been approached by a Canadian geologist called Ryan, and Ryan's got really interested in landholding in Manitou Lakes area. That's also in Ontario, but it's sort of about a 5-hour drive west of Thunder Bay. So I mean, it's a completely different greenstone belt. And myself and Nick really liked what he had to offer. But I didn't want, I'm always been conscious that we've got to find out if there's a metal endowment on a property, and then we've either got to go for it or we bugger off. But I never wanted a collection of properties. I'm happy to have investments because then you've still got a stake in that property, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't want too many active projects. So we said to Ryan, look, we love what you've got. We genuinely love what we've got, but we just can't add it into our portfolio because in market terms, we're going to look like we're spreading ourselves really thin. And I've proved that with our actions with Australia. You know, I couldn't finance the work that needed to be done in Australia. The Australians got the finance on the ASX, and they've proved immensely successful since they've done that. And when the Fulcrum guys approached us, the first thing I actually did was get back in contact with Ryan and see if he'd managed to vend his properties into anyone, or were they still available? And Ryan, I'm glad to say, Ryan was talking to someone, but he said, no, they're available. He wanted to be a main sort of driver on the ground. Ryan's strengths are very much on the ground and getting into these properties. So, and that works for us perfectly. We're not egotistical. We just want to get out. We want to make discoveries and move on. And that works for us beautifully. So it's like, no, all the boxes tick. So that meant that I could go back to Fulcrum, say to them, yes, we're prepared to do a deal on Big Bear. But the realities are that we love the project. We've done a lot of work on it. We know we've got something from the Shriver Pyramid linking it over towards one of the lakes. But I'm certainly prepared to talk about a situation where we could vend the property in. And the upshot was that we structured a deal where we would own 20% of the listed entity, which is Fulcrum Metals, and we would get a payment of 200,000 sterling on listing as well, and we would retain a 2% NSR in the Big Bear project. There was a couple of other clauses, and this is why I can talk about the value of Fulcrum when it comes to market and why I've probably got a better understanding. The Fulcrum guys within our deal, they've got to raise 2.75 million. And the reason that figure's in there is to protect our 20%, so we're not in the very early stages getting diluted down, because that's going to happen with any investment in this sector, by the way, as you look to develop them and grow your assets. So you've got to expect that. And as a result, with their structure, with their seed funders and everything else, you can already get an idea that their market cap, they'll come to market maybe 7 or 8 million pounds, and rightly so. They've got some cracking assets there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you vended, you effectively sold those projects. Remember, we used to talk about Big Bear to Fulcrum in order for them to develop it, and the upside remains there, should there be any, for Panther, due to your holding in that listed vehicle when it does indeed list. So what the direct projects then that Panther hold is the Dotted Lake and the Manitou Lakes area?
Yep, and the Bonga. So that deal allowed us to take the Manitou Lakes project on, effectively. So we swapped one for the other, 200,000 in sterling, and the upfront cost of Manitou Lakes was $11,000, plus some staking, probably 15 grand in sterling terms. Mm-hmm. So it's a cracking deal for company and a shareholder. So yeah, our direct holding, we own 100% of Dotted Lake. There is no financial instrument over Dotted Lake whatsoever, i.e. NSRs or anything. We are 100% owners. Manitou Lakes, we have an option agreement in place, and that option agreement is structured. Don't quote me totally on these numbers. It's around a spend of $125,000 first year Canadian dollars, $350,000 Canadian year two, and $400,000 year three. And they're structured as such with the historic data on Manitou. We know that we would go from one stage to the next stage, and then we'd be drilling. So we'd be spending that kind of money anyways. It's not a mistake, guys. You know, a 2 or 3 hole drill program on Manitou is going to cost you $300,000-$400,000 when you've chucked everything in the mix. So we'd be spending that to find out. And up at Abonga, we've got a similar deal in place with Liam Bowyer. So that, again, that's an option. Mm-hmm. Deal there is that we've got to drill 8,000 meters within the option period. And we've currently drilled around 500 meters there. This current program, we'll drill around 3,000 meters. So we're already eating well into that option agreement, allowing us to convert. And of course, if we get a sniff of anything, you soon hit 8,000 meters on something like a bong. So it's very, very achievable. It's all geared around success, all those options agreements.
And obviously, what's sitting in the background underpinning this now is obviously that a healthy balance sheet as well, Dan. Because obviously, the Fulcrum shares will eventually get into the balance sheet, but you've also got the Australian investment as well.
Yeah. You're looking at investments of circa £4 million, and we've just raised £1 million, and that's where your £5 million comes from. And don't forget, we get $200,000 as well from Fulcrum on listing, and that they're looking at. Initially, our agreement goes to the end of October, at which stage they have to pay us a break clause of €50,000 if they're not listed by then. I believe they may move into early part of November, first, second week in November. I think that's their current deadline. And I'm not going to action that with such a small overrun. You know, the deal works for us, it works for them. And, you know, with the results we've recently released on Manitou Lakes, that's become exceptionally sexy. So, yeah. That's where you, and that's why I'm saying Manitou, Dotted, Bonga, all valued at zero. Mm-hmm. Have a look at those properties and tell me they're worth nothing.
Yeah, no, there's definitely, but you're not the only company out there, Dan. I mean, there's lots of companies trading well below cash and all sorts. It's just a crazy market at the moment, but there's definitely green shoots. I've not seen any of the silly placings that you get yet when companies are desperate for money. So maybe we're still to get some of them, you know, the 50% discount ones, because they need the money. Usually for me, when I see them, that's the very bottom, the only way is up.
Yeah, you know, some people would say that ours was a silly placing, Kenny. 5.5p of 8.5p warrants. But there's very good reasons for that. It's structured for success. We've got the capital to be able to drill the targets we've got that will produce the income from the warrants. That means we wouldn't need to come back to market for a very long time. Some people would say that we possibly raised at the bottom of the market. But there are actions and events behind the scenes that you can't always show the market everything. But we want to be getting on with this sooner rather than later due to people in place in other places that are watching what we're doing very, very closely.
No, it's there. I mean, sometimes it's just better to have the money down, and regardless of where the market is, if you need the money, needs must, you've just got to go and do it. And sometimes you're damned if you do, sometimes you're damned if you don't. The money was there, it was available. You had to make a decision. You made the decision. and you just go on with it.
You know, 100% right decisions, bro. The decision was actually very easy. Sadly, it's the you know, before you announce the market, the impact it's going to have on sentiment, and that people are going to be emotionally involved and are going to emotionally react, which is a natural thing. But for the business now, in the medium term, and the longer term, it's absolutely the right decision. If all of our warrants were issued within this process, we'd still only have around 113 million shares in issue. Have not got a huge amount of stock out there. And of course, we've been quite illiquid. We've got such a loyal shareholder base, which I'm eternally grateful for. This stock, it will help liquidity as well over the medium term. And then as a result, our shareholders will see benefits from that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think it was a wise move. Sorry, Mark, I'll let you come in.
Well, just to, I think, to get that idea then, Darren, of the process to get there, the focus being Dotted, Ubonga and Manitou. Do you want to maybe just take us through quickly each of those projects and perhaps what they're all about, first of all, the work that Panther's done that gives you confidence? And was it Manitou you said looking very sexy now? Maybe leave that one till last. But maybe just take us through the three projects and why you think they're going to lead to that buyout that you say is the end goal.
Well, I think that if we focus first of all on Ubonga, because that is without doubt our absolute priority at this stage. We've identified four more. We've drilled at Wishbone. Wishbone we drilled in the autumn of 2021. We hit huge intercepts of massive sulfide. That's massive sulfide was barren. We know from the geochemical work that's been done that we've actually discovered a VMS that BHP couldn't do when they were in the area in the 1991. We know the system has basically turned 90 degrees on its side. Some people may have seen my now infamous traffic cone description that actually taught people what it was about. Mm-hmm. We know that that sulfide comes onto the edge of the system. And we now at Wishbone go for the discovery, look for the heart of the system. We've got extremely high copper grade all around that area, and that's leaching from somewhere. We've got four other targets on there. The number one target has always been Awkward, which is another target on Ubonga. That is a conduit system that we believe is prospective for nickel, copper, and the PG group metals. That conduit has never been drilled, which is remarkable. There's been some drilling taking place about 2 kilometres north of that actually intersected up to 0.7% nickel, 0.3% copper. We can't even work out why those holes were drilled in that area, despite the fact that we have every single bit of historic data. Leanne Bowyer, who's a world-renowned geologist, maybe not in the public markets, but she is, is very excited by Awkward. Should that conduit be live, it has an almost identical geological footprint and signature to the Lac des Hills mine, and that's 80 kilometres due south from us. And that has been producing since the 90s, was sold but in a nearly $1 billion Canadian deal as recently as 2019, I believe, like 2018. So this is a serious area. That's exciting. I could go into that deeply. I won't. We've got Ottertooth. Ottertooth has got a high mag, low mag signature. It's prospective for VMS style deposits. The mag signature actually identifies one bang on what you would look at and say, well, that's two VMSs there. You don't know that. That's just our interpretation of that. And there was along that line, there was you've then got that's Ottertooth. You've then got study. That is another VMS target. There was one hole put in there. When you look at that, you think, right, that anomaly has been drilled. It's 300 meters wide. It's I believe 2.5 kilometers long. That has one drill hole put in it. You say, right, that's been drilled. Actually, when you look at that drill hole, it was 149 feet deep. So less than 50 meters deep. It was drilled at an angle of 50 degrees. So it actually only went to a depth of 23 meters. This was in the 60s. The core was never tested, yet they intersected lots of massive sulfide. And when you see that, it is absolutely astonishing that number one, the core wasn't tested. Number two, nobody's ever been back there. And it's still a head scratcher. But it's one of those ones that people looked at and said, that's been drilled. It's actually been drilled to a depth of 23 meters. It intersected massive sulfide. Why? There's lots of these areas in Canada. Not so many now. And we'd be delighted to get into there as well. And then you've got Silver Rim. Silver Rim is more speculative. Silver Rim has got very high lithium and silver showings. And there's an anomaly at Silver Rim that's you can't explain. Now, Silver Rim sits on the Awkward Batholith, which is north of the Awkward target, a lot further north. And it's actually, for what we want to do with that anomaly, we want to drill into it. It's nearly as cheap for us to drill into it as to go out there and do all the metallurgical work, soils, the rock chips, and everything else. So we just said, well, let's incorporate it. We'll put one hole into it, and then we're going to know the answers. And we're going to know the answers quickly as to what's happening on with that anomaly and what it is. It's the best way because we can then put that for certain to bed. We're not always wondering. That's Awkward. And then you've got Manitou Lakes. Manitou Lakes is a gold property. We've just announced the results of a soil program that we conducted in the summer. Mm-hmm. Now, the soil program in the Barker area is quite extraordinary. It's got a lot of high numbers, but it's actually there's gold in the soils across the entire area of the soil program. So what we're going to be doing is going back out there and actually extending the area to the south and to the east and continuing the soil program. This is the Barker mine, which is an historic mine. It's 100 years old. That produced gold. That's about 700 meters to the south. And we believe this is connected to the shear zone that the Barker mine was mining. So this soil area is 700 meters north, and we believe this is an extension to that shear zone. So we've already got an extended area of gold, of anomalous gold in soils. We know it links to a historically producing mine, and it's just brought the Barker area right into play. It's just the gold is so widespread. So at this stage, we've just got to do a bit more groundwork because it is so widespread. It's remarkable. And there's this sort of kind of a forgotten area, the Manitou Lakes area. There's no regional geophysics. The area is really forgotten. And we're back in there and we're very much bringing it to life. And don't forget that the land around us and to our north was it's exploration property, but it was taken over by the guys who owned Dryden, and they paid $7 million for this land package earlier on in the year. We thought that would scupper our deal to take on the Manitou Lakes with Ryan, but he was good to his word and continued through, and we got it executed. So Manitou Lakes is banging. In fact, we even know we're going to go out there, do soils. We'll follow up with IP over winter, and that IP will allow us to identify drill targets. That's how significant this anomalous golden soil is in that location. But we're already defining it down to drill targets.
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say two of the three projects, Darren, you're actively exploring and drilling in the case of Ubonga. And with Dotted Lake, it's almost going back to the football analogy. It's almost half time and you're just eating your six pies that you usually have at half time, Darren, and just waiting to see what happens in the second half.
Yeah, you don't get a body like mine without having six pies at half time, Kenny, it has to be said. But yeah, I like that analogy. For Dotted Lake, because you know it's almost like it was it's almost like we were really sort of 2-0 down with 5 minutes to go before half time, and we've now pulled it back to 2-2 with a couple of late first half goals, and we've got a chance now just to get in front of the manager and reassess things and make sure that we're well armed. And but we've also got a microphone into their dressing room in terms of what Palladium One and First Class Metals are doing. So we have a sneaky advantage without them knowing. Well, they know, but in a football analogy term.
Yeah, you just need somebody to give the hairdryer treatment. You need to get Fergie dusted down and bring him along so you do.
What a legend.
Yeah, anyway, I've talked enough about football, so I have. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe let's wrap it up a little bit because we are coming up on about an hour, and maybe we can talk, Darren, just the final thoughts. I know you always have a lot of opinions on the economy and of course the gold market, and it's timely, of course, with the Manitou Lakes news as well there that you've told us about. So, what are your thoughts on what's going to happen? I mean, I'll put my thoughts out that I think this winter's going to be pretty tough. I think for everyone, not just investors, I think for the general population. And I think if that happens, then it's not going to be pretty really for the markets in general. However, I am very bullish after that fact, that we could be looking at the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for investors in the commodity space. Certainly now, only the other day, the European Union finally announced a critical metals initiative, which the United States did a long time ago, and it seems that Europe may be finally waking up, and suddenly, you know, it's nothing and then suddenly and all at once, isn't it, that what tends to happen? And it's only when it's in your face that we start to think, oh, actually, maybe we should frack again, or maybe we should go nuclear. Always when it's maybe a little bit too late to be considering that. But yeah, in short, I think it could get pretty nasty in the short term. But then I feel that it could get extremely exciting for commodities stocks. And of course, you know, gold as well, when things get nasty, tends to do well, doesn't it? But what are your thoughts?
Look, I think the underlying commodity market on a broader sweep is just down to supply and demand. And short term, who knows? It's a guess. Mm. Longer term, I think there isn't a commodity out there that's going to rise.
No,
but gold, in particular, and I think you're going to see dramatic rises. You know, I think what we've seen in the gas price, it is going to come to every single industrial metal once the markets have settled, and everybody's actually happy to accept that people still want stuff. They still want mobile phones. They still want cars, be that combustion engine or electric vehicles that are now costing you more to fuel up than due to electricity prices. But that's a different conversation. And, you know, everybody's going to require these commodities. And the fact is that in the medium term, mines take longer to come on stream. The discoveries are becoming more difficult to identify. You've potentially got less areas and less properties, and they're going to come. But gold is a favourite one of mine, and I think that it's no coincidence that Mr. Putin has been hoarding gold for many, many years. China have been, India have been, in the East. Is it? Something like 60% of all gold produced is in the East as opposed to in the West, and I don't think it's it's a coincidence in the timing of Mr. Putin's invasion of Ukraine. That it was at a point where economically the West is weak, and I think getting weaker. I think people have heard enough of the Fed. I think the Fed has got to change tact. I think the Fed's treated people and possibly the UK as well. The sentiment is around people treating people like they're stupid. What was the inflation was transitory when everyone knew that inflation wasn't transitory. Everyone pointing the finger at Russia for the spike in gas prices. Well, before Russia went into Ukraine, 31 energy companies in the UK went bust. I think that you will start to see, and I hope to see as well, a gradual withdrawal out of Ukraine by Russia. I think that Mr. Putin is an exceptionally bright fella. He's got agendas on his side that the West can't use and wouldn't use for moral reasons, and rightly so. But ultimately, he needed something to propel his economic plan. And I'm a believer that the invasion of Ukraine was actually that propellant. That was what was chucked into the mix to get this happening. We're looking at Russia with the new BRICS gold standard that they're looking at to go into competition with the LBMA. And a view that is held by a huge number of commentators in the West, that the precious metals market is manipulated by the big eight banks with their derivatives and their paper positions. And you'll hear a lot of commentators agree with that paper trading is giving a false gold price. And it's going to be interesting to see if this new gold standard gets legs. Russia's certainly looking at having some kind of backing to any currency or any group. The BRICS, as they're called, are looking more for an asset-based currency. They are, I think they're reading the room better than the West are, and in particular the Fed. Because gold is down, but only in dollar terms. And that's on the back of the strength of the dollar. And is there going to be an erosion of the dollar over time? Well, frankly, I can't see there not being that, because the dollar's backed by nothing other than sentiment. It's, in 71, the gold standard was withdrawn, and we've had to trust the Fed and what they're doing and what they're saying. Well, I see it's almost death by a thousand cuts, and the Fed's got to learn to be, I think the Fed should be honest, and the UK and the whole of the West should be more honest with its people. We're living beyond our means. It's weakened our positions. We've allowed a situation to develop that means that now there's a momentum around the development of a currency or a situation that could see the dollar potentially eroded. That's going to be a driver for gold. The new BRIC standard would definitely be a driver for gold. And currencies that are backed by hard assets, well, that's going to draw capital and currency out of the United States. And that's at a time when interest rates are going up. Everyone's betting on the Fed lifting rates, going into recession, then quick pulling them back as quick as possible. Well, I think inflation's here, and I think it'll be here for some time. So, again, we may not see that cut of inflation that we're expecting. And everything is pointing to safe havens. And I think that gold isn't, at these levels, it is remarkable value.
Yeah. I mean, you can paint a similar picture with silver as well. I mean, that's getting spanked at the moment. And then you read that the London metal markets is getting emptied out of there every single day, you know, and you can't buy certain bars or coins for love nor money because they don't have stock of them. And you're just looking at the spot price. And as you say, it's the paper that's it's dragging it down because there's just a ridiculous amount of paper contracts out for silver anyway. I think we've talked about this before, Mark. I think it was... you've got the start. You'll be able to tell me it better than me. You remember it?
What is it like? If everyone who held the paper contract for silver stood to deliver it, there wasn't enough silver mined or unmined in the world 20 times over, I think, something.
Something ridiculous. But no, some of the metals markets are very strange. You know, gold and silver definitely fall into that category at the moment.
They are. I don't think they're strange as much as I think people have got an idea what's going on. And I actually think rather than people being angry now, they're tired. And it's actually when you get to being tired of it, that's generally a trigger. You know, because people say, you will just say no. And if the Russian exchange gets off the ground, and there are stories of it, the value being around $2,300, $400 for gold per ounce. If you're a shareholder in Barrick, for instance, and I know there's all kinds of sanctions in place, but that if it's an exchange that has multiple countries using it, they'll be able to feed their gold, their physical gold into that market. And the shareholder would expect you to be trading your gold through that exchange and not through the LBMA if that's sitting at $1,600, $1,700 an ounce. And they'll know that. And as I say, it's probably time for some hard questions and some real changes in the system to enable us to maintain our trust in these markets, particularly in the government-driven markets. There's a lot of short-termism in the West. And the likes of China and Russia, they don't have those same pressures. They may have elections every 4 or 5 years, but your opportunity to have a to have an election with more than one name of it is more widespread in the West than it is in the East. Let's put it like that at times. So we've got to develop a longer term policy, and you can't fool. You can fool the people some of the time, but you can't fool them the whole time. And I think that people have got to the stage where they will find other avenues. And that's what's happened, and that's what's propelled Putin, and he's used Ukraine to get that going, in my opinion. And that's why I'm hoping that you'll see a gradual de-escalation in Ukraine, because that propellant's done. It's done its job, and it's a disgusting thing to do. But I think there are bigger reasons behind it that either the West are not talking about or don't want to, because of the potential impact on the likes of a gold market that they currently control, and the currency markets, which the dollar is so strong because there isn't any other option out there. But you get an asset-backed currency, you get the fish then.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's strange times we're living in, Dan, so as between, you know, probably the last 2 or 3 years, the onset of COVID, and obviously now you've just talked about, you know, Russia and Ukraine. It's almost like black swan, back-to-back black swan events. It's certainly shook the market, so it has. It's nothing like we've had before. Definitely not.
And yeah, there's a lot of talk of a lot of people sitting on cash. And it won't be lost on them with inflation running at, let's just call it 10%, for argument's sake. They'll be aware that that's a diminishing asset all the time for them.
Yeah.
So they will be looking at deploying that capital I think the biggest thing is at the moment that people are not quite sure where to deploy that capital. And when it comes back in, it's going to come in droves. And I actually am reasonably confident that that people will be looking at more asset-backed areas to put that capital into. And there's no doubts that exploration and mining will get a decent slice of that pie. And then you're going to see returns that we'd have already started to see. But as I say, as you rightly identify, the back-to-back Black Swan events have probably curtailed that just in the short term.
Yeah. I mean, there's been opportunities in the last two or three years as well. I mean, there's opportunities just now. So there is. I mean, every cloud is a silver lining. You know, the market's maybe down and you know, people are sitting on the sidelines, but this is the time to be for companies to be doing deals, as you guys have been doing and quite a few other companies. But although there's a lot of companies that have just buried their head in the sand and just waiting for the storm to blow over. But people forget about these companies, so you've got to keep flag waving all the time, regardless of what the markets are doing, or people soon forget you. It's a cutthroat business, as you know, Dan.
Absolutely. And I went and buy it for the first 2 or 3 weeks after our raise, but that was generally to allow the emotion to come out of the raise.
Yep.
I don't think that's a bad idea either at times.
No, you just let it sink in. And you know, the initial reaction is, you know, well, this is terrible. But once people look at it and say, well, actually, you know, we're cashed up, we've got active exploration projects, blah, 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 we've got a good balance sheet. You know, sometimes it takes, you say, a few days for the initial reaction to calm down, and then people see the benefits. Look, we're actually cashed up, you know, we're financed through to, I'm assuming, at least Q1, Q2 next year. Dan's at
Good. Yeah, we've got a very low cash burn anyways.
Yep.
I'm doing this for, you know, for the discovery and the sellout and what impact Pies. That can have to me personally. Yeah. I'm certainly not doing it for the wages. I could do substantially better on the markets trading, but it's that's not a lot of fun for me. I get the pleasure out of building businesses, and certainly this is the first one. And the aim is a buyout, and I'll rinse and repeat, Kenny. That is the idea. So if I'm not successful here, I'll never get a chance to rinse and repeat, and that's the simple fact of it. But the other flip side of that, of course, is that if you are successful, then you can almost cherry pick a little bit. But it's going to be purely about discoveries, Kenny.
Yeah, well, you've got the drill turning at Bonga, and you're actively exploring the two lakes, and obviously your neighbours are drilling at Dotted Lake. So no, it's a good position to be in. I mean, I think we've pretty much covered everything in our usual kind of rambling style, but it seems to work. Mark, is there anything new?
No, I think we've covered everything. I mean, we're good over an hour now on that podcast, Darren. I think we've covered pretty much everything there and got your wise words on the state of the economy as well, which is always appreciated. So thank you. And I hope you do get the chance to rinse and repeat. I hope you are successful.
Thank you very much. Well, if there's anybody out there that's actually still awake, thanks for listening. hopefully there was some useful information in there. And look, reach out to me. Talk to me. I'm always happy to engage, and I can talk about Panther all day long. You know, you should probably think yourself fortunate that this podcast isn't 3 hours long. But then I think Mark and Kenny would certainly be pulling me up at that stage.
Yeah. Anyway, appreciate your time for coming on as usual, Dan, and hopefully you'll be speaking to Mark again soon with results of some of these project exploration activities you've got on in your projects.
Yep, definitely.
All right.
Excellent. Cheers. Thank you, Darren. Look forward to
it. Great to have you on, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.